This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice left Luxembourg to return to the United States today. This flight concludes her 8-day tour of Europe and the Middle East. The trip was in part to introduce herself to her counterparts abroad in her new role as the nation's top diplomat. It was also an attempt to try to repair relations with some key European allies. After 3 years of espousing unilateral policies, the Bush administration appears to be changing its tone. Just how much is the question? Condoleezza Rice has, without a doubt, managed to charm and impress many on her trip, including the leaders of France and Germany. But some of her statements regarding Iran, for example, have some wondering just how different relations will be. And that raises today's question. How much does the U.S. need Europe, or does Europe still need the U.S.? To what extent do you feel comfortable going it alone in terms of foreign policy? And how much autonomy are you willing to give up in order to have better relations with Europe? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And here to give us a European take on Condoleezza Rice's first official trip abroad as Secretary of State is Peter Ford. He is Chief European Correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and he joins us from his office in Paris. Thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
So, Peter Ford, how did Condoleezza Rice's trip play in Europe?
Well, I think she did very well. She was stepping into the lion's den somewhat, especially coming to Paris. But she got plaudits. She got rave reviews from most of the press. She was very gracious. She was very charming. She made all the right noises. Europeans were happy to hear a U.S. Secretary of State who has the ear of the president, unlike perhaps Colin Powell, say the sorts of things that she was saying about the importance of a strong Europe, about the importance of transatlantic ties, and about how Washington wants to discuss things with Europe and reach common solutions to common problems.
But the style was right. Is that all they were really listening for at this point? Because there was nothing concrete or particularly concrete that she was saying or policy changes that she was articulating.
No, and that's what some of the French critics have said since she made her speech here a couple of days ago. In fact, Libération, the left-wing daily, used the American phrase in its editorial to say she walks the walk, she talks the talk, but can she walk the walk? This is going to come down to just concrete questions, I think, of policy, and one of them is Iran. And there was already a problem with what she was saying in Brussels about the need for Europe to be tougher with Iran and to make it clear to Tehran that referral to the Security Council is looming if the negotiations that France, Germany, and the United Kingdom are carrying out with Iran to try and persuade them to stop enriching uranium don't work. Now, Europeans don't want that sort of loud noises being made in the background. They'd rather get on with the negotiations and hope they work, but it doesn't seem that Dr. Rice believes those negotiations are going to work.
Right. Now, apart from Libération and its editorial board, how would you say in Paris she was received? Was it a frosty reception? Were there protests, or did she get smiles mostly from even not just the journalists and the politicos from the people?
Well, she didn't get to see many of the people. She was being whizzed from one meeting to another. She did go to a music conservatory as a concert pianist. She was interested to spend a little time doing that, but that was about the only public appearance she made in front of ordinary French people. But she won kisses on the hand, left, right, and center from Jacques Chirac. The foreign minister, Michel Barnier, was calling her ma chère Condé, dear Condé.
Yeah.
In Germany, she got on even better with Gerhard Schröder. I think she did a very good job of at least paving the way for better relations and making it clear that Washington wants the atmospherics to change.
Right, right. Well, you mentioned Gerhard Schröder. How much work does she have to do with Germany, and how far do you think she got on this trip?
Well, I think most of the work that this trip was designed to do was to try and get everybody singing from the same hymn sheet. I mean, on concrete political questions like Iran, like Kyoto protocols about global warming, like the International Criminal Court and whether Darfur war crimes were referred to it, I don't think there's going to be any movement. There's certainly no sign of any movement. But on Iraq and on the Middle East peace process, I think there are chances that that Western Europe and Eastern Europe now and the United States can work together. I mean, certainly nobody in this side of the Atlantic is going to be sending any troops to Iraq to take part in a counterinsurgency program. I think that's clear. But probably one way or another, everybody in NATO will cough up some sort of help in the way of training, in the way of moral support, in the way of money, one thing or another. And of course, now that the United States does appear to be seriously engaged in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the Europeans are very encouraged because, frankly, there was nothing they could do there on their own. But there is something that everybody can do to work by influencing Palestinians, by pressuring the Israelis, to try and move that process forward. Without the Americans, nothing was going to happen.
Right. So what about Spain? There's a new government in Spain. Was there any progress made in that front?
No. I mean, the Spaniards changed direction radically over Iraq when the new Social Democratic government took over last March, and I don't think there's any chance of it reversing course. Spain is perhaps of less importance as another of those European countries skeptical of the United States than it was as one of the few Western European countries supporting the United States, and it wasn't a focus of Dr. Rice's visit this time.
Right. Now, President Bush is supposed to make a trip to Europe in about 2 weeks. How much of this was, you know, preparing the ground for a friendly reception for the president?
Well, I think that was certainly part of it. I mean, it was a whirlwind tour, and she had a lot of real work to do, not least in the Middle East. But I think a good deal of it was sending somebody like Dr. Rice, who is very charming and knows how to be a diplomat, ahead of President Bush, who's sometimes a little bit blunter. I think there's no doubt that when President Bush comes in a couple of weeks' time, he will find a warmer welcome than he would have done had he come 10 days ago. And it's certainly Condi Rice's hope that all 26 NATO countries will, by the time Bush gets there, be promising aid of one sort or another in Iraq. And that will be, I think, trumpeted as a major achievement.
Well, just finally, it's clear that the United States has things that it's got high on its agenda that it would like out of Europe. You know, you mentioned Iraq. Are there things that Europe would like out of the United States in the near term or in the not-so-near term? I'm thinking about, just because it's coming up, the Kyoto Protocol going into effect. That's the greenhouse gases, sorry.
That's clearly something that European Union would love the Americans to sign on to, but
that's not going to happen, it doesn't.
Tony Blair still clearly hopes that he can persuade President Bush to do that. I mean, one of the things that Blair said the other day at the World Economic Forum in Davos was that if America wants the rest of the world to sign on to its agenda, such as expanding freedom in the Middle East, America has to be part of Europe's agenda. There's, I think, most critically, apart from Darfur, most immediately perhaps, apart from Kyoto, is whether or not the United States will agree to see war crimes in Darfur referred to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, which has not yet dealt with any cases. The United States has always been opposed to this court since the Bush administration first took office, but the United States has described what happened in Darfur as genocide. So the Europeans would like to see the Americans follow that up and take war criminals to the court, which has been set up for that purpose.
Okay. Just to remind people, Darfur is the humanitarian crisis that's going on in Western Sudan. But anyway, thank you very much, Peter Ford.
You're welcome.
Peter Ford is chief European correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He joined us from his office in Paris, France. Someone who's been keeping a keen watch on relationships between the United States and Europe is Robert Kagan. He's a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He views better U.S. relations with Europe as a good thing, but not at the expense of America's goals in the world. We'll hear a different view in a bit, but Robert Kagan joins us now from his home in McLean, Virginia. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks very much.
Or I should say, welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Well, thanks again. Good to be back.
So after 3 years of, what shall we say, less than cordial and at times openly hostile relations, are we headed in a new and better direction or a new and warmer direction?
Well, it'd be hard to not get a little bit better, and I think we are moving toward a better relationship, as long as, you know, no one's under the illusion that we're returning to what we used to think of as the old transatlantic partnership. I think what we're seeing now is a little settling in on both sides to a new kind of relationship, which may be a little less close, but which doesn't have to be as acerbic and confrontational as it's been over the last couple of years.
Is it still possible, do you think? Has it become clear that we have to do that in this country, that that relationship has to thaw for the future health of global international policy?
Well, I think that, you know, there's no question that our relations with Europe are very important to us for a variety of reasons. They are fellow democracies. They share a very large number of our values and principles in the world. And the truth is, Americans care, by and large, despite what some may think. They care what Europeans think. And I think many Americans have been troubled by European denunciations of American policy. I don't think it is any longer the case that we rely on Europe in the same strategic sense that we used to, at least not when it comes to the kinds of problems that we're likely to be facing out there in the rest of the world. We rely on Europe in a strategic sense because Europe itself is at peace, and that's very much in America's interest. But when we think about dealing with China, when we think about dealing with the Middle East and other danger spots around the world, Europe is just not going to be the same kind of strategic partner that perhaps a lot of people hoped it might be.
What can we reasonably expect then?
I think we can reasonably expect some sort of general support on broad issues. I think that it's interesting that while Secretary Rice was in Europe talking about democracy, most European leaders felt the need and I think believed to say that democracy is important and that's something that we all should be supporting. And there are various ways that Europeans can and do support democracy around the world. I think when it comes to counting on European troops, whether it's in Iraq or elsewhere, that we should not expect. I don't think the Europeans are going to be providing any real military assistance in most of the kinds of conflicts and confrontations that we may face in the world.
All right. We're talking about relations between the United States and European nations. When we come back from a short break, we'll finish our conversation with Robert Kagan, and then we'll talk with political science professor John Mearsheimer. You can call us at 800-989-TALK or send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're talking with international affairs writer Robert Kagan about U.S. relations with Europe. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's invite one of our listeners onto the program now, Moji in Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a peace and human rights activist. I'm an Iranian-American, and one of my role models is Mrs. Shirin Ebadi, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2003. And my comments here are essentially echoing what she said in her recent New York Times op-ed, in which, I'm paraphrasing, essentially she said that the United States policy vis-a-vis Iran is not genuine, in that if Mrs. Rice and Mr. Bush are serious about cooperating with Europe with regards to the negotiations with Iran, they would not undermine these negotiations by either threatening or preparing to attack Iran's nuclear energy facilities, and would not perpetuate lies about Iran developing nuclear weapons when the IAEA, the United Nations watchdog agency, has repeatedly said there is no evidence that Iran is developing nuclear weapons. And what the U.S. policy is doing is undermining relationships with Europe, but also undermining human rights in Iran. And I don't believe that the U.S. foreign policy is at all concerned about freedom or human rights for the people in the Middle East.
Okay, well, let's hear what Robert Kagan has to say about that.
Well, I think that there's no question that the American government has looked with a little bit of skepticism on the European negotiations with Iran. I don't know how we can say that Iran is not suspected of developing nuclear weapons. If that were the case, the Europeans wouldn't be bothering with this lengthy negotiation. I think most government intelligence services believe that Iran is developing nuclear weapons.
This is an absolute lie, sir. There is no intelligence services who are saying that Iran is developing nuclear weapons.
Well, so then what are the Europeans negotiating? What are the Europeans negotiating with them about?
They're negotiating about normalizing relations so that
That's not true.
Well, this is okay, Moji. Thank you for making that point. I don't think we're going to be able to resolve it right at this point.
But I just wanted to say that what's interesting about Rice's visit was the degree to which she did continue to talk. She didn't use the phrase regime change about in reference to Iran, but she did talk about how Iran was out of step with the rest of the Middle East and emphasized the issue of democracy quite a bit. Now, people may think that's disingenuous or not. What's interesting to me is how troubled the Europeans are by that kind of talk.
Okay, let's now go to David. David in Yardley, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for my call.
Sure.
I'm a reserve military officer, and I've worked with NATO a few different times, and I've been kind of curious what your guests think about Europe's kind of endgame strategy with trying to kind of be a counterbalance to the United States diplomatically around the world, and talking with people negotiating with the Iranians, and they try to negotiate for peace in Israel. And what concerns me is that at the end of the day, Europe doesn't really have the military might anymore, really at all, to step in case negotiations go wrong. And it seems to me that it could almost be counterproductive to be negotiating with a country that doesn't want to do something whenever that country knows that at the end of the day, they can't really make them.
Well, that's an interesting point, Robert Kagan. How do you address that?
Well, the sort of more optimistic way to look at it is that the United States and Europe are sort of playing good cop, bad cop with mm-hmm. Iran. That the Europeans are reaching out with diplomatic proposals. The United States sort of hanging back with the implicit and almost explicit threat that if these talks break down, that non-diplomatic means may be tried. The interesting thing about this dynamic is I think Europeans, while they don't want the United States to take any military action against Iran, both know and actually value the fact that Iranians are concerned about that. They think that perhaps that may make the Iranians more compliant, that if you took the military option or some other option off the table, the Iranians might not be so interested in diplomatic progress. So it's an interesting dynamic we have going right now.
I think my broader question is, in the case of Iran, it makes sense, but if Europe wants to be an equal to the United States, which they seem to, at some point they have to develop their own military capability, and do you see them moving in that direction?
Well, I mean, I didn't mean to avoid your larger question, which I totally agree. And I've actually spent many years when I was living in Brussels. My wife was working at NATO, as a matter of fact. I spent those years sort of urging Europeans to build up their military capacity. The Europeans, especially the French, often talk about wanting a multipolar world. And I always wanted to tell them, well, build a pole. It's going to be difficult for Europeans to throw their weight around in a positive way in the world unless they have more military capacity. Now, many Europeans would argue that military capacity is not what is required and that they carry a tremendous amount of moral, diplomatic, political, as well as economic weight in the world, and that that can compensate for their relative lack of military power.
David, thanks very much for that call. Let's go now to Gregory in San Diego, California. Gregory, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for the chance to speak.
Sure.
I just fear that taking a more confrontational approach towards historic allies rather than a cooperational approach is counterproductive. There are so many matters, whether it's global trade, regional conflicts, weapons of mass destruction, global terrorism, humanitarian tragedies such as the tsunami, environmental problems. Russia and China, where are they going to be 5 years from now? We don't need people who are semi-allies or questionable allies. In the golden days of NATO, when there was the threat from the Soviet Union, there was this unanimity. Granted, it was motivated in part by the threat of nuclear war. that no longer is the case. I think that NATO is less important for the Europeans. The European Union now stretches as far east as Poland and Bulgaria. And I think there's going to develop a pan-Europeanism that is going to, if the divide between that the Atlantic poses continues, you'll see a pan-Europeanism that will say to the U.S., okay, you lecture us, you want our help, but you want our help only doing it your way. They'll say, okay, you do it your way, we'll do it our way. And I'm afraid, I hate to see that happen, but I'm afraid that's what's going to. Thank you very much.
Okay, Gregory, thanks for that. Robert Kagan.
Well, I mean, the good news is I think that obviously the Bush administration agrees with the caller on that point, and that's why they've sent Secretary Rice out there. And I think that, you know, within the limits of the relationship, she's done a pretty good job of trying to knit things back together. And the Europeans have been fairly receptive, it seems to me. One of the things that's been less noticed was the Conference of Defense Ministers under NATO that France hosted in Nice this week, which was clearly an attempt by France to sort of put a good face on their relationship with the Transatlantic Alliance. So I think that we are headed for smoother relations, just not the kind of relations that we enjoyed during the Cold War.
You know, I wanted to follow up one thing you said earlier about this notion of good cop, bad cop. You know, where you were suggesting it in terms of the Europeans negotiate on a friendly basis with Iran, with the bad cop U.S. waiting in the wings with the potential cudgel of a military action. And the issue there is, you know, for the good cop, bad cop strategy to work, just to pursue the analogy, the two sides have to be talking to one another to know, you know, when is one stops and the other one's picking up. So I'm wondering, you know, is there any chance that, that those discussions actually are taking place and they're just not taking place in public view?
Well, I mean, you're right to raise questions about it. The way I would put it is, I don't know how well the good cop, bad cop routine works if both sides don't know that they're playing this role together. And the truth is that in this case, and we will pursue this analogy till it's dead, the good cop is worried about the intentions of the bad cop, and the bad cop is worried that the good cop is too soft and won't get serious. And that's the situation. I mean, Rice explicitly, I would say, chided the Europeans for not really being tough enough on the Iranians. The Europeans will be quick to respond that the Americans are looking a little too threatening. So, you know, whether you can work a good cop, bad cop routine without real common cooperation on tactics and goals and strategies is a very interesting question. Right now, I'd say that's not where we are.
All right. Well, I think we squeezed every ounce of mileage we could out of that analogy.
Okay.
Thank you very much for pursuing it with me, and thanks for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Robert Kagan is a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and author of Paradise and Power, America versus Europe in the New World Order. He joined us from his home in McLean, Virginia. John Mearsheimer is a political science professor at the University of Chicago. He thinks President Bush's unilateral policies have left the U.S. vulnerable. Condoleezza Rice's visit is a clear shift towards a more multilateral direction in foreign policy. He joins us now from the studio at the university's news office. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
So, John Mearsheimer, how badly does the U.S. need Europe, do you think?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the Bush doctrine has crashed and burned in Iraq. And the United States is in a very difficult situation, not only in Iraq, but also with regard to Iran and with regard to North Korea. I would note with regard to North Korea, that subject that's not been talked about here, that last week it became clear that the North Koreans were providing fissile materials to the Libyans. What was the Bush administration's reaction? It was to send an emissary to China to get the Chinese to deal with the problem. And today, the North Koreans announced that they do have nuclear weapons and that they're pulling out of the six-party talks. And what has been the American reaction? It's not been talk about going to war or putting military pressure on the North Koreans, which surely would have been the response a few years ago. So you see what's happened here is that because we're stuck in a quagmire in Iraq, we have very little capability against countries like North Korea and Iran. We can't put much coercive pressure on them. So what we're doing is we're turning to the Chinese in the case of the North Koreans, and we're turning to the Europeans in the case of Iran, and turning to the Europeans in the case of Iraq to get their help. In a very important way, we're desperate.
But you're not suggesting that, I mean, there are other options for dealing with North Korea than a military one. They could certainly, and certainly that could involve European cooperation too. I'm not sure why it's worse to go to China.
But the problem with North Korea is the same problem with Iran, and it gets back to what you were talking to Robert Kagan about, mm-hmm. regarding good cops and bad cops. With regard to North Korea and with regard to Iran, the United States likes to play the bad cop uh-huh. and rely on its allies to play the good cop. But when the United States plays the bad cop, it overwhelms the good cop image. And what North Korea and Iran see is only the United States threatening them. And when the United States threatens those countries, what they do is pursue nuclear weapons. The North Koreans made that very clear in their announcement that they had a nuclear arsenal. They said that Condi Rice's testimony in January at her confirmation hearings, when she described North Korea as an outpost of tyranny, was one of the things that pushed them over the edge. So if we continue to play the bad cop with regard to Iran, we're going to undermine the European effort. And with regard to North Korea, we're going to undermine the efforts of the South Koreans and the Chinese.
We're talking with John Mearsheimer about U.S. foreign policy, and particularly with regard to Europe and on the heels of Rice's trip to Europe. Our number is 800-989-8255. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's hear what our listeners have to say now. Marty in Fargo, North Dakota. Marty, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you. I would like to say, to sum up what I'm going to follow up with, is that I think that we should have good relations with all nations, but we should maintain our sovereignty with all nations. Europe, I think we should be careful of getting too close to them, and they have a different system. They seem to believe in a socialist approach, that socialism requires strong central government. Best example for that is most of those nations, I think with England as the exception, has had to give up control of their currency, which is definitely a major surrender of sovereignty. The UN is a place to stay clear of. They can't wait to figure out some way to tax us. And once that starts, who knows where, they'd like to take our guns. And then these agreements that we enter into, treaties, for example, the World Health Organization and the World Trade Organization now have plans, not just plans. I mean, in June of this year, the World Trade, those two organizations plan to, and these are all secret, well, they might as well be secret because they don't get reported, they plan to heavily regulate the supplement industry in the member nations, and so that has big consequences for us.
Okay,
health food stores would have to go would have to close with these new regulations.
Okay, Marty, you've sketched out some of the points. Can I get John Mearsheimer to respond to them?
Well, I think that Marty's view on allies and institutions like the United Nations reflects the early Bush administration's thinking. In other words, the early Bush administration thought that the United States could behave unilaterally. It really didn't need allies. It really didn't need the United Nations. It could use its big stick to solve all the world's problems. But now that we've gotten ourselves into a real pickle in Iraq, what the United States is discovering or rediscovering is that it needs allies if it's going to run the world. It needs institutions. When we talk about the Iranian problem, it's not only the Europeans that we're turning to for help. The fact is that the Bush administration would like to use the IAEA, which
That's
is headed by Mohammed al-Baradei.
Energy Agency. The Atomic Energy Agency. Go ahead.
Yes, which it disparaged during the run-up to the war in Iraq, but it wants to use it now to deal with the Iranian problem. And the reason is that it sometimes makes very good sense for countries, even countries as powerful as the United States, to rely on allies and to rely on international institutions to pursue its interests around the globe.
So briefly, in about 30 seconds, what should we be doing vis-a-vis Europe, do you think? Are we doing the right thing by going there and trying to be nice?
Well, we have no choice. Okay. I mean, Condoleezza Rice is over there because the United States is in a really bad situation. And what we're trying to do is get some help with regard to Iraq. And as both Robert Kagan and Peter Ford pointed out, we're going to get very little help on that front. And then we also have a common interest in dealing with the terrorism problem we face, and we also have a common interest in dealing with the Iranian problem. So it behooves us to work closely with the Europeans to try and solve these problems. But whether or not the Bush administration can do that remains to be seen.
Well, I'm sure we'll have you back to help us decide whether they did succeed. Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
John Mearsheimer is the author of The Tragedy of Great Power Politics. He's also a political science professor at the University of Chicago. He joined us from the studio at the university's news office. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk about Central Park's bright new wardrobe designed by Christo. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.